Good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday afternoon, and it is now time for Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Hey, fetch.
Quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude.
Hey, Fetch, did that woman really say you have garnets of steel and a mind like a freaking laser?
Mary, you can't be asking questions like that. This is Inside the Eye Live Prime Time.
Why not? Aren't we broadcasting from the Middle East?
Well, yeah, but we might be seen as being politically incorrect.
You know, the problem is everybody dumps people when there's a sign of political incorrectness.
Etan, you're always politically correct.
Heck, thanks. Does that mean we can talk about dumping the Israelis tomorrow?
Oh, I'm sure you will probably say quite a bit more than that. And now coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, this is Inside the Eye Live Primetime with your host, The Fetch.
Maybe if I turn that up, I can hear myself. Hello, everybody. It's The Fetch. Thank you very much for that. Mary from Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. It is indeed The Fetch, and you are listening to Inside the Eye Live Primetime right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio. Today's date is Thursday, January the 10th, 2019, and a good Thursday afternoon, early evening to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late evening. Excuse me one second here. My darn cable's all tangled up in my chair here, and I can't move. Okay, sorry about that. I think now we can kind of roll a little easier. I was like being hamstrung here with a headphone cable wrapped around my chair, and I couldn't even sit up straight. All right, we're back. Anyways, today's date is Thursday, January the 10th, 2019, and a good Thursday afternoon, early evening again. To all of you listening in the United States and Canada, a good late evening to early Friday morning. To all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Riyadh is kind of sweater cool, kind of cool, with highs reaching only up to 61 degrees under clear and sunny skies. The current temperature is currently 48 degrees at 2 o'clock in the morning, while we will be going down to a low of 43 degrees in the hour just before sunrise. Winds are virtually non-existent at less than 5 miles per hour coming out of the north-northeast. Now across the Levant, which is basically Israel, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, there was quite a major storm this week. It blew through really over about 3-4 days, but it's kind of ended now, but it left snow in the upper elevations of Amman. I wasn't hit where my house is, but in some of the higher elevations of Amman towards Israel. They got a fairly good dusting of snow, 3 to 5 inches, something like that. We had quite a bit of severe windy conditions in Amman, blowing through the house, blowing things off the roof, basically. Literally blowing things off the roof. I mean, stuff from my roof came down, literally found on the street, on the porch, all over the place. So it was kind of a pretty windy. Bird cages were flown around. The birds were okay, but the cages actually were thrown around. They're not tied down or anything. They were protected by cardboard and plastic, you know, to keep the birds inside a little bit warm. And they literally blew their houses over. It'll huff and it'll puff and it'll blow their houses down, something like that. But it was, yeah, quite a condition out there. But it's kind of calmed down now. It's cold in Amman. I think down to like 4 or 5 degrees tonight, Celsius. So it's going to be in the 30s, upper 30s tonight. So a bit cold there. But however, that's not really the issue, because in Jordan, all is pretty much well and good. I mean, you know, the citizenry lives well. It's cold and it's a little expensive from time to time to keep your house warm, but at least you can live. But that's really not the case throughout Jordan, or not throughout Jordan, but throughout the Levant, because we have over 1 million people, let's say, just in Lebanon. You have, quite a bit, perhaps as many as that in Turkey. You have that perhaps in Jordan, and of course internally displaced Syrians equally. And this storm really, really smashed, quite frankly, the refugee camps that are in Lebanon this week. It's really kind of a tragic situation for them right now. Tent encampments literally housing thousands of Syrian refugees looked more like islands, you know. Basically, the tents are half sunk in water. Literally, women are wading literally knee deep in muddy water to move around. Others are trying to pump water out of tents, and that's mattresses soaked and foodstuffs are destroyed. Again, it was a five-day storm. It went through Lebanon. Heavy rain, snow, literally thousands, again, refugees in the Bekaa Valley. They had quite a bit of snow. And people, of course, lost everything in this situation. The UN Refugee Council or UN Refugee Agency said Thursday today that 361 sites that are home to some 11,000 Syrians have been affected. Of these 361, 15 of the settlements have absolutely just completely collapsed. They're basically wiped out. And at least 66 of the 61 are heavily, heavily impacted. So it's really a tragic situation for those people right now, to say the least. And if you look at the pictures, you just kind of, you know, you feel for people and stuck in natural disasters anywhere. But, of course, this is kind of close to home for us. Now, in happier times, everybody, this type of weather would have brought a lot of smiles. It would have brought a lot of joy. It would have been a wonderful time of year. But the Israelis, being who they are, have made a real mess. And, of course, the Americans seem all too eager to serve the Israeli interests over there. But it really would have been a happy time. I mean, people would have been getting their cars. They would have been driving from Jordan up into Syria, on into Lebanon. They would be out skiing on the slopes. People don't know that for the most part. But Lebanon is one of these popular southern tourist slash ski slope areas. The slopes aren't, you know, not like the Rockies or the Alps or something like that, but they're good, gentle slopes, good skiing areas. And whenever these storms come through, people used to get in their cars literally and just drive on into Lebanon and go skiing. It used to be a lot of fun for them. So that was happier days. Now it's all finished. That's not in the cards anymore, thanks to the Israelis. But it was very difficult, to say the least, this week. And so that's kind of how it is. Just been a tough week here in the Levant with the weather, especially in the displaced parts of Syria and Lebanon. It was interesting. I was talking to a guy today, not today, yesterday, from South Africa. And he doesn't really get the Middle East all that well. And he was asking me casually, you know, because he knows I'm in Amman quite a bit. He says, hey, do you go to the ocean? And I said, no, not really. And he said, oh, well, there's no water in Jordan. I said, no, there is. You can go down to Aqaba. But the problem is, like, a 4.5-hour drive. And if you take, and it, plus it's going to be over $120, maybe $140, $200 just in fuel to go back and forth. Fuel's very expensive. I said, so it's kind of an expensive trip. He said, oh, I didn't know that. I said, but you know, it's interesting. I said, if the Israelis were not there, we could just drive for about an hour and 40 minutes and we'd be right on the ocean inside of Palestine on the Mediterranean, and we could actually enjoy things. But I said that the Israelis are just a bunch of, they're insane. They're lunatics. They're idiots. They're nasty, nasty people. And he looked at me like, oh, you're an anti-Semite. I said, come on, dude. No, they're just nasty people. I know too many Americans where you go visit Israel through the Jordanian border. You got 2, 3, 4, 5 hours to get through. The Israeli border guards are nasty to Americans. Oftentimes they'll throw American passports on the ground, grind them under just to see if they will, you as an American, will do anything to them, because they know you can't. They know you can't. They know your State Department won't do a darn thing for you. The State Department basically is an extension of the Israeli government inside of Israel. That may not be the case inside of Amman, but the U.S. State Department in Israel is absolutely terrified of Jewish power. I mean, they will not work for an American citizen at all. They are basically servants of the Israeli state. We don't have a government operation. Anything that's U.S. inside of Israel is essentially working for the Israelis. Don't even think otherwise. So you can't go into Israel and actually expect the U.S. government to be there for you. It's not. The U.S. government is there for the Jewish people. It's not there for the American people. And if you don't understand that, time to get that into your head. But he went to this guy, you know, this Jordanian guy, who's a very senior level guy actually here. And he said, did you hear that? Did you hear that? And the guy said, what? What? He said, Dennis called the Israeli people nasty people. And he looked at him and said, yeah, they are. They're terribly nasty. I said, see, they're nasty. Everybody knows they're nasty, what's going on over here. These people are not human. These people are nasty, disgusting people. And it's like, oh, folks, wake up, man. That's all I can say to you, wake up. Hey, it's the Fetch. You know, it's 2:12 in the morning, and my voice sounds a little off. But I think that's just the prime time hour show, you know. What can we do? You know, we were talking the other week, an interesting story. The other week we were talking about how various platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, what they do is they throttle your numbers. They think that they make it appear as if you're not doing as well as you are. So essentially, beginning in June, I had all of my archive numbers, which is you guys listening, of course, and the archives, they crashed from about 3,200 per month down to 1,000 per month. So basically a drop of 68% to 70%. But what happens is that when you have certain personalities and the Jewish power base out there, let's call it that, doesn't like that person, and they will target that person. They will do anything and everything in their power to keep that person from having a voice out there. They will, on YouTube, for instance, they will take that person, they will stuff them off into a corner. You know, this has been deemed harmful and hateful by members of our community. It's not. It's just a bunch of whining Jews, okay? Period. That's the truth of it. I mean, when you really break it down, it's just a bunch of whining, lying Jews. But they will do whatever they can. And you know what's interesting is, we had last Saturday, we brought on a sweetheart lady. She is Monica Schaefer, and she has, of course, become a dissident, a political prisoner in Germany for quite some time. She was arrested while visiting Germany. And all she did was put up this very simple, really nothing video. And they basically arrested her for that video in Germany, you know, charged her with all these crimes, kept her in jail for 10 months. Well, she came on the show. And, of course, she's on the Jewish target hit list, and I'm not on it yet, thank goodness. Well, I guess I am somewhat. I've been hit 70%. I guess I still am on it. But that show registers, get this, zero listens. That's right, zero listens so far for the week on archive.org. But that tells you the nasty, unfair, dishonest, uncouth enemy that you're dealing with. They don't play by the same rules that you and I do. We expect when we go into a game, per se, that the rules will be fair, that the pairings are to the best of everyone's ability, fair, that everything is honest, that there is an ethical way in which the game will be played. But that is not how your enemy plays, everybody. Your enemy plays a dirty, nasty, lying, cheating game. And if you haven't figured that out now, as a Western citizen, as you view your surrounding situation, let's say in the United States with the government shutdown and the border security issues, which are, I trust me, guys, get out there. You just have no idea. No other country, none. And of course, a country as great as the United States should be state of the art superior to everybody. But nobody out there has a government, a border situation so out of control and out of hand as the United States and the rest of Europe. Nobody has this, folks. You should be demanding. If you live in Western nations, you should be demanding absolute fealty to the issue of border security. It is absolutely imperative that you start to do this. Let's see. Paul English last week, Michael Tom Goodrich were on. They had a great show. Sorry I wasn't here. As you heard, probably, I'm sure you heard if you were listening, I was traveling if you didn't catch Saturday's show. Okay, that's it. I was traveling last week. I was literally on an airplane. Fun thing about that trip, if you've been kind of following me a while, you know I've got the two girls that take care of the house. Emily's more like the girlfriend wife type of situation because we've been together for so long, and the other girl is kind of like the daughter. She's been with me for so long, and she really helps out around the house. She's now managing the house in Jordan. Emily and I, we went to the airport together. We actually got – I put her on a plane. She flew off, and they did not put her on a hotel, even though she had like 13 and a half hour overweight period. She didn't want one anyways, apparently. She just stayed at the gate. I thought they'd give her a hotel, you know, but she stayed at the gate and she waited that 13 and a half hours, finally got into Manila. And then from Manila, took an hour or so trip down into the southern, a little bit south of Manila. It's actually a nice location, a beautiful location, quite frankly, in the middle part of the main island there. And she's had a great time. She's been camping out and having a great time in Manila, getting to see the daughters and the sons and the grandkids. She's a grandma many, 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 many times over already. And so she got to see everybody, got to see her mother, got to see her father. And everything is going well. Thank goodness for that. So that was great. But as I was traveling in, flying in, I got on the plane again around 11. It was late. 11:30, but we got in on time. They just hauled the plane. They flew it pretty fast, got us really in on time. Everything went smooth, got in. I was listening to the show, and I've listened to that show last week with Paul and Tom Goodrich, Michael Tom Goodrich, a few times, quite frankly. It's a really good show. I really enjoyed that show. The problem I have with that show, for everybody, is living up to the expectations. Boy, they made me. That's like, man, you guys are trying to make it. I got to work hard if I'm going to live up to those expectations. Guys, calm it down a bit. But yeah, it was great to hear, you know, quite frankly, having the show in good, capable hands, quite honestly. We had lined up others also. Frederick C. Blackburn was also lined up, but Paul did the show. So usually when we're gone, we'll always put the show in proper hands. And that was certainly the case last week. So we hope you enjoyed the show. And hopefully you're happy to have me back, too. Maybe not. Maybe say, bring Tom back. Bring Tom back, please. Anyways, guys, but it's early. It's 2:19 in the morning here. Quite a busy day. Actually, it wasn't. It was a very slow week this week for me. Next week will not be, for sure. It's going to be quite hectic last week, or this coming week. But, folks, it's been very interesting. You know, getting prepared for an extended stay here now in Riyadh. All right, our chat room is open, InsideTheEyeLive.com. It's InsideTheEyeLive.com. The telephone lines are actually down. And what's happened is that Skype has forced everybody to basically upgrade. And the upgrade of Skype does not actually permit us to receive telephone calls. Skype is basically, they have really made their technology. Honestly, it can't even do what we could do with analog telephone lines in the 1980s. So I'm under the impression, quite frankly, that Skype is run, its development team is run by a bunch of H-1B inferior type of people that don't understand the needs of telecommunications in the United States, that don't understand the technologies that we have become used to in the United States, and they are turning Microsoft Skype product, quite frankly, into a third world product. I mean, literally the capabilities of Skype are such that we are now looking to replace the platform entirely. So we've been on the phone tonight looking at solutions. What we're thinking we're going to do, everybody, is we may actually bring in an IP PBX, a low-cost IP PBX. I'll bring in some telephone numbers. And I will route those calls to my own IP PBX and then use a mixing board to mix it all together so we can continue to take phone calls. We are looking at solutions right now to help, obviously, keep the telephone lines open because it is an integral part of the show. We do get a lot of telephone calls. We appreciate our listeners who do contribute. We think they are part of the show equally and often contribute some very good information. But for now, that is down. So that will not happen. Now, next week, Thursday, next week, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution.Radio, we're going to have Michael King. Michael King is behind a website called The Tomato Bubble. He's pretty much an expert on World War II history, and he's known as knowledgeable about Russia. He's known as somewhat of a Putin file by some people, to be fair, if you want to put out a little bit of a fair devil's advocate out there. But however, we are looking forward to having Mike King here next week. He also is a good cat lover. And so he's going to be on next week at 7 o'clock. So look forward for that. We're going to have to find a way to make sure we can connect him now that Skype has basically decided we want to be full-on idiots here and we're not going to work anymore. But we're going to bring on Michael King next week. So this week, it's just going to be the fetch because I can't get you on the line no matter how hard I try. So I apologize. I mean, I kind of apologize to that, but it, like the Democrats, like Jewish society, like Jewish culture, what can we say? It is basically inept, and the policies have to be dealt with, and it basically retards us many, many ways. I mean, this is a very retarded company, this Microsoft product here. Let's see. I wish I could take your calls, though. I really do. Wish we could take your calls. You know, there's a lot of convulsions going out there in the West. If you haven't noticed, we've had some. We really do have in the West some major convulsions. The United States with the government shut down. My gosh, that's a huge deal, everybody. It's shut down. Trump, for his, and I would support the president on this, has said that it could last years. It could last years. Well, he doesn't have any say in it because he was voted to, first of all, stop and drop immigration. That was our first thing. We know as nationalists that we have a problem with the Jewish community. We know we have traitors all about, around. We trust, and we have always trusted, that there are good people inside of our government, white hats if you want to call it, that will work and should be, they should, but will work to help bring about some type of rational, fair change to we, the American people. Now, we don't have any say in that. We're not in that part of the world. We don't have a handle on what goes on in the deep state arena, in the dark depths of deceptions, as it were. But we've always believed, quite frankly, that the Western civilization at large is not going to absolutely 100% capitulate to this Jewish Talmudic monstrosity that we have been faced with and are faced with, quite frankly, and really reared its ugly head, so to speak, on 9/11. And for the most part, you know, there seems to be some movement. Again, it seems to be slow. It seems to be time consuming, and slow, I guess, is the same thing. And a lot of people are impatient, and I'm one of them. You know, people like Ann Coulter saying Trump, you know, day 412, you know, the wall is still not built. Well, again, Trump cannot fund anything. Trump is just a president. He can sign off on everything, which means he can keep things from actually getting put into play. But Trump's main role here in the West, and at least in America, is to stop immigration, to slow down, and not just slow down, but to stop. And actually, we need to reverse it, like the Saudis have done. We need to get rid of millions of people, like the Saudis have done. Look, the Saudis have a population here of about 27 to 28 million people, and they have actually exported, repatriated probably close to 3 to 4 million people out of Saudi Arabia. Now, what is that as a percentage? Now take the same percentage. I haven't figured it out, quite frankly, but it's about what? 5% of the population? Okay, so if we were to get rid of 5% of our population, we would have to get rid of, I don't know, 5, 10, probably 15, 22 million, something like that, we'd have to get rid of out of our country in the United States. And this has to happen across the West, everybody. This is a very serious issue. The West is involved in this existential battle. There is a really silly story, if you think about it. A silly story came out of Denmark yesterday. And what it was a woman. She was in a yellow vest. Can you imagine? Oh, we're going into a break, everybody. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live prime time. And back with more right after this break. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, primetime again, Thursday, January the 10th, 2019. Moving straight along, aren't we? Anyways, good Thursday afternoon. Hope everything's going well with you. I know it's been tough weather, quite frankly, in the Middle East. Parts of Europe have been pretty well smashed equally, and I'm not so sure, quite frankly. I haven't checked the weather in the United States in a while, but the political weather's kind of hot. It's kind of heated, to say the least. But it's nonetheless, it is what it is, right? You know, going into the break, we're talking about a little bit of the convulsions going on in the West, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, talk a little bit about Syria, talk a little bit about the border situation in the United States, talk a little bit about the government shutdown in the United States, talk a little bit about France. So these are going to be some of the topics we're going to cover throughout the rest of the show. Now, what we have, of course, is listener-sponsored-supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And, of course, without your donations, there's no Revolution Radio. And so we all have our technical issues here we're trying to solve. Skype really has made it very challenging for all of us. I know Studio B has had its has had its situation down. We're looking to bring in some equipment and otherwise to try to keep the costs down, running costs down to help with us, our side, to keep the telephone lines open. But it's a lot of work, everybody, really keep things up. So again, your donations are what help keep that all up. So always keep all of us at this stage in your minds, starting with the studio, of course. That's the main platform. And that's what keeps me coming back every week and every twice a week. Now we're doing 20 hours a week, believe it or not, of content. That's not a small joke. That's a lot of work. And so your assistance is always appreciated in what you do for us. So thanks so much for that to start the year. And again, do what you can. Now, the ITEL Cat Reports, proudly sponsored by friends, still friends of grissom.blogspot.com. We got to talk about that, guys, if you're listening. But nonetheless, friends of grissom.blogspot.com. Always keep Grissom. They're our official archiver. He's back from a 52, I don't know, I think it was a 52 to 65 hour hangover, something like that. But he's getting back on track over there at grissom.blogspot. Everything's now caught up over there relative to posting after the new year. Everything's finally caught up, quite frankly. Not that we're complaining, we're just noticing, just reporting. And but keep him in mind, buy him a cup of coffee. I know a few of you did. Over the holiday, trust me, that goes a long ways. The service he provides, honestly, is not free either. To host all of those radio shows that he does costs money equally. It's about $20 a month. It's not a lot, but it is what it is, you know. And when you're without work for years and years and you're on welfare, so to speak, and you're paying your rent and everything else, believe me, a cup of coffee helps. It, you could just take that cup of coffee from one account and give it to the hosting company. That keeps all those radio shows up and alive. And so obviously your sponsorship is very, very, very appreciated. Interesting note here with my cats. I've left, you know, so Bruiser has just been apparently a tear. He just hasn't been quiet. He's, according to the girl at the house, he's not been himself. So the poor guy, you know, we're not there. Emily's not there. So everybody's gone in his life. Somebody's always been there for him this entire life. And now everybody's gone except for the gal taking care of the house for me. And of course, she's part of the family too. So it's not like he doesn't know her, but it's been difficult. He's had a tough time adjusting. He walks around crying too much. The poor thing. One eye is one eye. You know, he's okay. He likes to get up in the morning. He likes to cry, let me out. It has been mating season. So one eye's been out, but he's been coming home. Last 2 days, he was scratched up. His face was scratched up pretty bad because he's basically the dominant, at least at this stage of his life, he's the dominant male in the area. So basically, he takes on everybody that comes into his territory. And sometimes, you know, cats, you know, there's always up and comers, right? And so he's come back a few days now with scratched up face, pretty well scratched up face. And 2 days ago, they didn't want to let him out. And so he was underneath the table. They took a picture of him and sent it to me. And I swear, it's the funniest darn thing. His ears are like half pinned back and off to the side in different angles. And you could just see he's like ticked off. It's like, man, let me out. I don't want to be in the house. Get me out of here. I want out. It was really kind of a cute picture because I know my cat. You know, I can just see, man, he's pissed. He's ticked off. It's like, dude, let me do that. Actually, get me out of the house. But it's been really cold the last day and a half, quite frankly, with the storm that came through and finally finished. But it's very, very cold right now. So when I actually did not even go out for the past, I don't know, 36, 40 hours, kicking out. He's like, check with this, man. It's cold out there. He cries. He puts up a protest. But when he walks outside, he says, no, it's too cold for me, man. And he just comes right back into the house. So it's been okay. We've been not worrying about him too much because everything is fine. But that's kind of it. You know, it's mating season again. Getting his face beat up a little bit. He's not losing these battles, I'm sure. But he got scratched a little bit pretty bad, and he's doing fine, of course. And so every time I call home, he's basically sleeping. He's not even up, except he's the cutest darn thing when he wants to eat. If he wants to eat, you'll never find a sweeter cat. Trust me. If he likes you, he's super sweet, man. He's so sweet. He's like, pawing your face, petting your face, stroking your face, saying, oh, feed me, man, feed me, I'm hungry. But he's a good guy. He's a really great guy. And Bruiser's Bruiser, as we like to say, and he's crying up a storm. We don't know what to do. We may do something for him when we get back. But for now, That's the ITEL Cat Report, again, proudly sponsored by Friends of Grism.blogspot.com. That's Friends of Grism.blogspot.com. And of course, don't forget to really get Zap a cup of coffee. It helps with the hosting and all that kind of cool stuff. So everything literally does help. And we thank you for all your sponsorship of that site.
Oy vey. Oy gewalt. It's like another shower.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on William Pierce.
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
The Oy vey moment is proudly
sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of
The Synagogue of Satan,
Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored,
features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Barnes Review at barnesreview.org. Order your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live Now link, or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media. And this week's Oy vey moment is going to come to us again from jolly old England, and it has, again, to do with sports. And sports is something in the UK that they still, as they do, I guess, in America, too, and many other nations around the world, sports remains a big deal. But what happens in the UK, everybody, is that, for instance, we can, like, in the United States, we can talk about the NBA, and we can go into various Jewish publications, and we can hear Jews joking about how the NBA is the most Jewish organization in American sports. And we can even hear Jewish people joking about how the NBA is really the Jubia, because so many Jewish owners. It's a plus 50% Jewish ownership of the NBA. Now, I don't know if you knew that, but it's over 50%. I think the NFL may be over 50% too, but I think it's at least high 30s to 40%, something like that. It's unconscionable, quite frankly, that a minority like this has so much overbearing power inside of the United States. But in the United States, we have this idea of called freedom of speech, and it's something that we have to exercise. It is something that we have to use judiciously without wanting to use the word Jew there. But we have to use it judiciously. We have to use it pragmatically. We cannot get into a situation where we are afraid to deal rhetorically with our problems, whether it's talking about the Jewish question, whether it's talking about Jews in politics, whether it's talking about Jews in sports. Jews do not for a second, folks, hesitate to talk about white privilege, about how there's no such thing as white identity, that there's no such thing as white culture. They're all over the spectrum of hate speech towards white people. And we should, if you do not recognize that. A lot of us do recognize it. But we cannot get ourselves into this situation where Jews are going to be able to essentially act as lords and masters of the land and start throwing people into jail for things that Jews don't like. Now, we are already 40 to 70% there, because already we can go out onto a Twitter, and if we say something that is just not properly correct there and a bunch of Jewish people complain, guess what? You are going to be put into some type of social media jail, whether it's you're banned for 30 days or you are taken offline for a week, or you are forced to retract what you said and if you want to be reinstated, or they will simply delete you and your entire body of work. Every single one of those has happened to me. Every single one. On some of these platforms, like a Facebook, these are family-oriented sites for a lot of us. That's where the family kind of gets together and puts their information out there. A lot of the less sophisticated family members rely on the communications tools like a Messenger, Facebook Messenger, to communicate to family and friends. So it forces us who are part of this larger social family to accept using these products. We cannot educate everybody overnight when these companies have such an absolute market dominance. But if you are ever banned from these platforms, guess what? You're also banned from being able to communicate with your family. This is the true nature of Jewish power in America. And it's time that people start to recognize it, vocalize it, and start to push back against it. Because if you do not, these people are not going to stop with that. The goal here is absolute subservience of everybody in the land towards Jews and their agenda. That's the goal. While you're out there enjoying yourself at a sporting event or whatever, they're scheming many times behind the scenes as to what they can do as a group to harm the interests of the American people. It's not specifically stated that way, but by default, what is good for Jews, to use a Jewish term, is by default dangerous, if not deadly, but certainly against the interest of the United States and the vast majority of its people. That is clearly on display here when we look at issues with the border, when we look at issues of the government shutdown, when we look at the lies coming out of the Jewish press, and it should be called the Jewish press. But folks, we do not want to get down to where we are like in the UK. The UK has become a totalitarian, dystopian nightmare. And people don't grasp it yet. But it is rapidly turning into this dystopian nightmare of Jewish dominance over what was formerly the host people or the British people. Now, perhaps it's been that way since I don't know when. Because, hey, they've been fighting as British people for the Rothschild Empire for hundreds of years. But you have a situation now inside of a football game where London police have now arrested a teenage fan over, get this, an anti-Semitic offense. Since when did it become an offense to be offensive towards anybody on this planet? Now, how can you listen to these types of stories and see the Jewish people in anything other than a light of Talmudic terrorists trying to destroy our lands? The story says London's Metropolitan Police arrested a 17-year-old male for a racially aggravated public order offense during the first leg of the League Cup semi between Tottenham Hotspur, which calls themselves the Yid Army. It is a racist fan base that calls itself the Yid Army, and Chelsea once again at Wembley. It was understood, it says in the article, which always goes according to Jewish, Jewish sympathies. It was, the language used was anti-Semitic. I didn't know that if a Jew declares something anti-Semitic, because it doesn't have to be actually done. All you need in the UK, folks, is for some Jew to whine and say, he said something about me, and you can be arrested. Do you understand how serious that is to our Western lands? The Magna Carta, like the Constitution, is just a crappy piece of paper. That's what the Jewish community is telling all of us in our own lands. Saying here, police, quoting, have arrested a 70-year-old male for a racially aggravated public offense. Now, Chelsea supporters have been, of course, under the spotlight this whole time because everywhere you turn around, Jews are complaining. Now, understand how the Jewish community works. They have nothing to do. They don't work like you do. They don't go do a job, put their dues in, get their money, go home and take care of their family. So many of them work for NGOs that you pay for by your taxes because they don't pay taxes. What happens is some wealthy guy, the 1%, of course, is the Jewish people. Essentially, by and large, over 50% of the wealthiest billionaires on planet Earth, or at least within the West, are Jews, so that makes the 1% Jewish. They don't want to pay taxes, so what do? They give all their money to these NGOs, and the NGOs then organize against you, the people. Now, it says, historically, a small minority has used the Tottenham fixture as license to use anti-Semitic chants, noises, and gestures. What part of whiny, loser, Talmudic, tyrannical thugs from the Jewish people are you not starting to grasp here? The owner of Tottenham isn't British. He's Jewish. Period. He's Jewish, folks. So here you've got a wealthy Jewish guy comes over from Russia, from stealing half of his money from Russia, probably keeps me out of legal issues, right? Probably. Goes and buys a club inside of the UK, and now he's imposing a Talmudic tyranny over the people of the UK. You've had people banned in the UK for
anti-Semitism.
Now, a statement on Tottenham's website reminded ticket holders that foul, abusive, homophobic, or racist behavior will not be tolerated. It's worse than that. We will jail you for it. All of these protected minorities that produce nothing for anybody, that do nothing for the people, but other than cause problems, chaos, delusions, they're protected. And they're the problem. They are the problem. And quite frankly, anybody that is going out openly against these, but it's a kid, you're going to go after a 17-year-old kid. You people in the Jewish community are so pathetic. So disgustingly nasty and vindictive. You're going after a 17-year-old. And we're supposed to not notice how nasty, vindictive, and disgusting you people are? This is Britain. The land of the Magna Carta, man. And Jews lord over it as if it's their own fiefdom. And that the British people are basically serfs of the British people. The British people are serfs of the Jewish people. Jewish, the British people have no say in their own land. That's what the British are being told here. You have no say inside of the UK. And if you say, we can arrest you. Now it says here, yet many Tottenham fans who are not themselves Jewish have adopted the word Yid. Okay, fine. They call themselves the Yids. Now, if you want to go out there and call everybody Yids out there that's Jewish, how do they have the nerve, the frick? Nerve to call you an anti-Semite when you're basically saying something that they call themselves. Think about that. Then you go to the national television networks like the BBC and a show like Hard Talk, and you got this bearded monkey out there talking about how, oh, anti-Semitism is now in vogue. Oh my goodness, it's in vogue. Well, yeah. Because you're first and foremost everywhere we turn, which means that if we want to address our governments, folks, if you want to address your government, you have no choice but to go to the Jewish community for your redress. Who else are you going to go to? Some communities you're going to have to go get your redress from the Pakistanis. But you don't have your own representation. The only people that are making the decision are within the Jewish community. They buy and sell everything. They've got everything. They got a stranglehold on. So where's your redress going to be with relative to the government? Is it going to be with the Chinese or is it going to be with the Jewish people? And now if a Jew says, if you try to make a redress towards your own government, we're going to make it anti-Semitic, what are you left with? What really are you left with? You don't have a whole lot of choice here in the matter, do you? And it just keeps going on. Not only did they first go after this 17-year-old kid, but they want to make it very clear, reporting in another magazine, RTE, that another three additional people were now arrested on suspicion of quote-unquote racially aggravated public order offenses just this past Tuesday at something known as the Carabao Cup. It was a semifinal. It was the same gig between Chelsea and Tottenham, by the way. So you had first the 17-year-old man. He went out. They even categorize it. We got this guy at 7:40, 20 minutes prior to kickoff. Well, we took him out. Yet they can't get one Pakistani rapist until 15 years later, after all the victims start coming forward, after they're well past being a child. But certainly they can go after you in 20 minutes if you say something against, even in jest, some Jewish monkey on the field somewhere. Folks, this is wrong. And it's time to start calling it out. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, prime time. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, prime time. Good Thursday afternoon. Good evening, everybody, I guess, if you're in the United States, on the West Coast, something like that, East Coast, I should say. Good late afternoon, drive time, quite frankly, if you're in California. It's drive time, although I don't know about California anymore, but it's drive time. And just a happy Thursday, everybody. Hope everything's going well with you. It's quiet here in Riyadh. That's a good sign, quite frankly. Cool. I just opened the door. Not the door. I just opened the window. There's like one window in my apartment here. And I just opened it. It's cold. It's like, dang, I should probably get back up and shut the darn thing. And now it's not so cold as this story coming out of I think France, but I'm not sure. It's pulling up now. But there's a story about this old man. He was 102, and he went up onto a roof, and he got stuck there, and he actually died on the roof. What a terrible thing, man. You make it to 102. It was in London. A British coroner found this guy dead, 102-year-old man who got stuck on his roof for 3 days after falling while adjusting his TV antenna. And accidentally, basically, couldn't get up on his roof. Can you imagine? You're dying because you got to go watch crap news like the BBC. But I guess at 102, it's the way it goes. But Ron Easton was this guy's name. He died in a hospital 9 days after he was rescued from his ordeal on the roof in a place called Big Bury-on-Sea, 235 miles or 375 kilometers southwest of London. And officials said that the evidence indicates that Easton developed hypothermia, which you can imagine, man, sitting out there where it's freezing, basically, and you're stuck for 3 days, and he doesn't have one of these clappers to tell people he's just fallen and can't get up, and nobody knows where he's at. Nobody checked on him. He's on the roof for 3 days. What a terrible thing to have happen to you, right? But things, life is strange. Life can be strange. What else is news out there? There's so much really news. You know, we were talking about I'm just trying to talk and read at the same time. But in the first hour, we're talking about this collapse, you know, where we have a lot of calamity, we have a lot of convulsions going on in the West. And it's really true, folks. Paris is in convulsions. London is reaching a point. Washington is in convulsions. And all of it has to do, if you think about it, with lands that are no longer Western ruled. Interesting thing coming out of Tucker Carlson. You know, he's saying, look, we're ruled by mercenaries. We are. We aren't ruled by our own people anymore. We have a rulership here that doesn't feel obligated to the people anymore. We're ruled by people who basically are bought and paid for an agenda. They say what they want, but they will do another thing. They don't really care about you, the people. And that's really the issue at play here in so much of the West. Whether you look at the Brexit deal in the UK, where they voted for this Brexit deal years ago, and they're still farting around as if they don't know what they're doing. Now, from a practical perspective, you know, we could just call these people inept, brainless morons, because that would be actually true. if we put it into a perspective of them working to achieve a satisfactory outcome relative to the mission at hand. Now, the mission at hand, you know, the open mission at hand would be for the UK to have left the EU and put together a proper deal that essentially shows that the people of and their voices is heard and the deal serves the British people. But after 2 years, these inept, classless, idiotic morons haven't achieved anything, let's be honest. And the same holds true inside of Washington, where we have a government now filled with one of the largest percentages of Jewish domination ever. Folks, it's Jewish dominated. Grow up if you don't get it. This is a Jewish Congress. Every time you hear the term bipartisan, when does it have to do, or how do I word that? Every time we hear the term bipartisan, it always has to do with something that is absolutely specific and critical to a Jewish interest, whether it's support for Israel, whether it's clamping down on free speech, whether it is trying to take away something from people. Really, if you look at the word bipartisan, understand clearly what's going on here. The media, this Jewish monstrosity, they will sell to you a bipartisan bill, but follow along. What is it really that they're talking about? It's about some specific goal of the Jewish community, whether it's the ADL, whether it's AIPAC, whether it's the National Jewish Congress, it doesn't matter. Bipartisan simply means a bill that Jews want passed. But the term bipartisan, you're supposed to think that, hey, oh, this has got support everywhere. No, it's got support of the Jewish people and their political organizations. But it has nothing to do with us. They're all mercenaries. They don't work for you. They work for the Jewish community. It's a huge problem. It's a massive problem, and Tucker Carlson's got it right on this one. They're all mercenaries. They work for somebody else, but we have huge problems in the West. First, you've got, of course, the Yellow Vest. And what's really fascinating about the Yellow Vest is that we endured years and years of color revolutions, whether it was in Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, as if that was a revolution, right? Ukraine. We saw all these color revolutions. There was one tried out, I think, in Bahrain also. So you see, and you know what? The real color revolution is France and the Yellow Vests. Story came out of Denmark. I didn't finish it earlier, but a story came out of Denmark. A woman who's in her early 20s has a child in a stroller. She was arrested. You know what her charge was? She refused to take off her yellow vest. That was her charge. We have French generals coming out now openly declaring that they should be allowed to start shooting protesters. Now, in some respects, I've already kind of seen that type of writing on the wall. We've got a situation where Macron, the president of France, is appealing to the Islamic insurgency to start to mount a counter-protest, and they're going to call it a green vest. And guess what? Voila! The French government, these cowards, who have served Jewish interests for decades, who have engineered the mass destruction of French society through immigration, now wants to use the immigrants as what? We've been saying it all along. The army to support the establishment. Because the establishment has always known that they are counter to the people. That the people themselves are actually very smart, but they are just sleeping. And should the people ever awake, the only targets are going to be who? Those in power. But who are in power? The Jewish people are in power. So therefore, the Jews want to set what? Some type of defense army in front of you, and then they did what? They created a clash of civilizations. In a nutshell, that's exactly what they've done. And now if they're really calling, literally they are really calling, as it was reported in some papers, that Macron is appealing to the Islamic community to come and rise to his defense, That's exactly what's happening here. Now, Italy's interior minister, which I kind of like, Matteo Salvini, I wish I was on Twitter just to follow him, quite frankly, and his coalition partners have announced their support, not for the French government, but for France's Yellow Vest movement. He is accusing French President Emmanuel Macron of being against his people. And that is absolutely true. Macron is against the French people. Macron works for the banking elite. You could call him a Rothschild. He is a Rothschild. He doesn't work for the French people. Salvini quoted here says, I support honest citizens protesting against a president who governs against his people. What is wrong with that? Absolutely nothing. That is exactly what we should have, this type of leader. Salvini also said that at the same time, he firmly condemned protesters who have resorted to violence. But again, with the way we all know about how you throw in as the state these hooligans and these agent provocateurs, that a lot of the violence that is initiated isn't even coming from the people. It's coming from the police themselves. And we have to ask ourselves, in times where we have these types of convulsions, do we come down on the side of the people, or do we come down and protest against the violence of the state itself? Meanwhile, Luigi Di Maio, he's a 32-year-old deputy prime minister of Italy. He also leads the Five Star Movement, which is known as M5S, has told the Yellow Vests on Monday that do not give up. Do not give up. So now we have civil war within the EU itself, with one sovereign state, Italy, coming down against the sovereignty of the illegitimate and abusive French government. In fact, when you look at what France has started to talk about, using the military for violence itself, you're going to have a situation where we have Macron the butcher. And when we get down to the situation of Macron the butcher, not one of us Americans wants to go in and fight inside of France on behalf of the French people. But that's the exact justification that was used to send your kids as Americans, your kids as British, your kids, quite frankly, as French too, to go and defend, quote unquote, Syrians against the butcher Assad. Yet we are looking at a butcher himself, Macron, within our very own myths. A statement coming from Rousseau inside of Italy said, the Five Star Movement is ready to give you the support you need. Like you, we too strongly condemn those who cause violence during the demonstrations, but we know that your movement is peaceful. Folks, here's the thing. And it's hard for some of you to possibly put your fingers around it because you're not around it enough. But intelligence services the world over, those who are professional, and Americans aren't. Americans are, seriously, too many American intelligence people are just idiots, okay? Deal with it. They don't like it, too bad. They're idiots. You had 9/11 on your own soil and you can't even solve it. Don't tell me you're professional, okay? Give me a freaking break already. But when you break down intelligence services, they know what's going on. They know. I'll tell you how it works. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. Districts are put into like, cities are put into like districts. And then they're broken down into like little tiny precincts. And you've got men and women who are paid to do nothing but drive around all day. And their only job is to write reports about what is the tone of the street, who the possible problem and troublemakers are. Now, this is exceedingly boring, time-consuming effort here. But this still goes on today. Now, in the West, being Jewish, they think they like to think they're clever, right? They got to sell you something. They're going to try to do it through IA, facial recognition. Basically Jewish chutzpah that they know everything just by looking at something. Oh, look at him. He said this, therefore he's that. But that's not how the real world works. Jews are idiots themselves. That's why they make so many stupid decisions. Eventually everything they do turns to you know what, like America is turning today. And France is turning today. And Britain is turning today. And Germany has turned. They know what's going on. Intelligence services know what is going on. The professionals. The Americans, yeah, there's professional ones are there, but trust me, you got a lot of fluff out there that are just dumb. They still believe in the fairy tale of 9/11. Don't tell me they're professional. Please, okay? So when you hear statements here that we know your movement is peaceful, then they've probably themselves as an intelligence agency determined how the violence is flaring up. Now, once you start the violence and you provide agent provocateurs that provide really great footage for your television shows, you go, oh, wow, look how violent those people are. And you're like, oh, you're so swayed by all the simple pictures you see on TV. The intelligence services aren't, and the intelligent people aren't. We hold our ground. I've said this story many times. I haven't said it in a long time. Perhaps it's a good time to say it now. Folks, the media and the powers that be, because the media is one of their assets, they're on the outside, and you, as the people, are like fish inside of this giant, giant tank. For the most part, call it a tank that looks like something you might see on an oil farm. Giant water tank, but it's like you see on an oil farm. And when they want you to go to the other side, they will bang on the side of the walls opposite of where they want you to go. Everything is always inverted. So if they want you to go this way, they will bang on the other side. If they want you to go that way, they're going to bang on the other side. And what you have to learn to do is be patient and have peace within yourself to not move. When the temptation is the most to move and to be moved by something of this nature, this is when you must become at your stillest and your most peaceful so that you do not move. And I assure you that if I am right, and I usually am right, folks, and you pay attention and you keep your eyes open, the nervousness and the jittery mentality of these people will start to come open and shine through for you. Because you did not react as they expected you to. And now their reaction to your non-reaction becomes a cue for you to start to analyze where the problems are, who is causing the problems. And if you're really lucky, smart, shrewd, and clever, maybe even how to solve the problems. The Italians have come out to the yellow vest with this statement. We can put at your disposal some functions of our operative system for direct democracy. Rousseau, for example, called to action to organize the events on the territory or the voting system to define the electoral program and to choose the candidates to be represented in the elections. In other words, we're already setting up the situation now where the French government is no longer legitimate. It is basically an occupying force of a foreign power itself, and that is, of course, the banking system. Now, if you want, you can go in and you can play the Rothschild card and everything else you want. It's the Freemasons, but you better darn well look at organized Jewish power. And as you excise the governments, and you conduct the purges. Don't ever forget the number of purges Jews have done in our own lands. Whether it's our own politics, it's our own media. Even in countries like Germany during the quote-unquote denazification program. And you must follow through and ruthlessly also de-Judaize, like other lands, your land. It might be a painful thought for some of you to factor in. It might be difficult to comprehend. You may even think this is so distasteful to even hear and talk about. But think about how many times you have seen your representatives railroaded outside of some type of political circle simply because of their views, which countered or went against Jewish interests. And worse, folks, how many of them died under suspicious circumstances? Some of it wasn't even suspicious, like President Kennedy himself. But how about Jim Trafficante? Oh, his tractor ran over him. And how many have been railroaded into prison simply because of their views? And you need to start looking at this because, again, the greatest thing that Jewish people will use, and they've been talked about this ever since the days even before Henry Ford, when he wrote his book, The International Jew, they will use the court systems to make problems. So we now know part of the solution must be the purging of the courts themselves so that they are not ever allowed to bring this useless, stupid, senseless stuff to the courts and actually get a hearing. When you think about it, everybody, how many times have you really thought about bake me a cake? And if you don't bake the cake, we're going to destroy you. How many times have you watched some liberal leftist nutcase loon from a Jewish re-education camp called college campuses come out of here and try to argue with you that you are the one who uses sixth grade science when you say that there's only two genders? That really there's 100 genders. That's so absurd. It even goes beyond Jewish rationality, I should say, because Jews recognize themselves six genders. The Italians, again, have come through and says, in politics, this I can't read because it's French. What began, he says here, meanwhile, the Globe and the Mail reports that Macron's tough stance on the Yellow Vest movement has backfired. Absolutely, it should backfire. See, here's the funny thing. We have a lot of international people here in Saudi Arabia. Don't worry, we're never going to vote, folks. And why should you give Somalians the right to vote in your land? Why should you give anybody from other countries the right to vote in your lands? You shouldn't. Quite frankly, it's dumb. It's stupid. It's insane. Because you're basically displacing yourself for nothing. And they have their interests, you have yours, and you're basically saying, here, like in Maine, here's Lewiston, take over this town for us. It's yours now. For what? You just gave it to them? What did they do to build it? What did they do to contribute to it? And you're giving away the town to basically a foreign occupying power here. The Globe is reporting the anti-government protesters on Saturday used a forklift truck to force their way into a government ministry compound, torched cars near the Champs-Élysées, and in one violent skirmish on a bridge over the Seine, punched and kicked riot police officers to the ground. Now, does anybody think that with all of this going on, that the forces involved, like the military and the police, did not themselves bring this upon themselves? Because after all, the French people and the police are supposed to be as one. Why are the French police even standing in the way at this stage? Why are they being stupid? For a paycheck? Perhaps they need to do a banking run or something. Of course, that's exactly what they're going to do. In fact, what there has been is a lot of economic sabotage against the state inside of France. One of the issues is shutting down all of the speed cameras. Now it's now estimated that there were some 3,200 speed cameras all throughout France, the entire network. And it was unknown just how many they were damaged, but BBC reporter Hugh Schofield in Paris, he was going all over the place and he's saying, hey, you know, if you drive around here, you can really see that there's a... we are going into break. Yeah, sorry, thank you, man. It's the Fetch, everybody. Final half hour right after this, back with more, man. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, primetime Thursday, January the 10th, everybody. Good Thursday. Hope your Thursday's going well. Mine went pretty good, actually. I'm still working a little bit on trying to get my eye adjusted. You know, we've heard the stories about the Fetch's one eye. Yes, Inside the Eye Live has not been good. No, I'm okay, actually. It could be worse, folks. I'm not dying here, so to speak. But, yeah, the eye is... basically what happened, we just had a detached retina and it was pretty severely detached equally. And we got it put together over the summer. It healed. I came back, had to get the oil taken out, and that's been done now. And then they found a cataract, replaced that, put a new lens in there. And now what I'm seeing is the lens. I'm actually seeing the darn lens, man. When I look at a straight line, I can see the line go over the lens. And so wherever the lens is, which is, of course, right in the middle of your eye, everything goes like disappears because the light is refracting away and through. And so basically it's been a little difficult, trying to get adjusted here. Have not seen the doctor yet. I'll probably go probably just because I'm lazy, right? No, I work so much, but I probably will go next week and try to get that done, get to the doctor, and hopefully we can get this eye basically situated. The clarity's coming back after the surgery. So for everybody that sent all the nice wishes and stuff like that, thank you very much. We are not nearly close to being able to actually use the thing. You know, it is what it is. So hopefully it's going to get better over time. And, I'll just have to go to see the doctor and see what his prognosis is. And if I'm not happy, I'll just have to go see a different doctor and get a second opinion. I just want to wrap up really what's going on with France and the yellow vests again next week. Just want to mention again, we're going to be bringing Mike King on from the Tomato Bubble. He's kind of an expert on World War II history, also issues relative to Russia. So we're going to bring him on to discuss basically what some of his views are, where things are headed in the Middle East, where they're going with the Russia. Where some of this deep state stuff might be coming from. I like his work, quite frankly. He hasn't been here for years, maybe 4 years. He has accepted. He said, book it. So next Thursday, 7:00, be sure to tune in. Mike King, the Tomato Bubble. And so that'll be kind of cool. And then Saturday, right now we have no guests lined up, but we are busy starting to line up guests for you leading on into the winter months here. So we're hoping to have a great run. We've been having a great run over at Inside the Alive, and of course that's not possible without you, the listener, right? Even though everything is showing zero, we know you guys are listening. Come on. We know you're listening. Nothing can turn to zero. So folks, that's kind of what's happening. Now to just wrap up this yellow vest thing, because it's a big deal, this weekend, what the French Yellow Vest guys have decided to do is to do a bank run. They're going to do a coordinated bank run. Whether that works or not, I don't know, but they're basically going to just start withdrawing all their money from the banks. And their theory is that if the banks collapse or start to weaken, that by default weakens the government. That is their strategy. Whether or not that works or not, I don't know. But most banks, they limit their ATM withdrawals, as you know, to certain figures, whether it's in the U.S., like $300 a day, whatever it might be. France, I'm sure, has their own. So they're going to have to wait till, I guess, Monday to line up and actually withdraw the rest of their money. And that's going to, of course, then let's see what the French government does, whether they put some restrictions on the banking, etc. But, of course, you know, we all know this is something that the banking people, the free market, open economy type of people always say, well, you can't put restrictions on capital. Why? Because they want to move their capital freely. And so let's see if they start to put capital restrictions on. That'll be a rather interesting development. But France is keeping and continues to play out. Now, this weekend, they are talking about now putting an additional 80,000 traders in a way. In many circumstances, some of these police, you can call them traitors to the French people, quite frankly. Quislings. I saw a picture the other day where you had a French citizen. All that he was doing, quite frankly, was using his cell phone to take pictures. And a police officer came up from behind him with some type of baton and stick or something and actually smacked the camera out of the guy's hand, literally smacked it out of his hand. And he did it. This police officer did this to a few other people. So again, we need to condemn the violence, and that police officer should be condemned. He should lose his job, as far as I'm concerned. Again, if we're going to be in the business of condemning violence, okay, let's start to condemn violence and let's take it seriously. And that includes the police. The police, look, it's just their job, guys. It's a job. Do you understand what a job is? And that job is to work for the people. So if we can show that police officer is using violence, okay, fire him. Period. Deny him the ability to make money. Look, if you're going to attack the people, then why should the people pay your salary? Oh, wait, they're not paying your salary. You're taking your money from where? The Jewish people? Is that what you're telling us? I don't know. To me, you got to start to work these things backwards. Now, in America, it's a huge deal because the government continues to be shut down, and it's probably going to be shut down for quite some time. Why? It's very simple. The Jewish Party, which is also known as the Democratic Party, they don't want to open the government because to open the government, they're going to have to provide us with what we would like. And let's be honest, one of the main reasons that President Trump in America was elected was immigration. We cannot have a viable nation if Jews engineer the final coup de grace and flood our countries. It's very simple. Now, there was some discussion now, and there continues to be, of course, increased discussion about what really is happening here. And Trump, it's sold in the newspapers and the press, build the wall. It's not about the wall, folks. It's about an integrated package, technology, personnel, systems, areas where you could use border, border security or fencing or walls or whatever. But it's integrated. Now, I will see a bipartisan, there's that word again, right? I'll see a bipartisan package to ship $38, $40 billion over to Israel. I'll see a bipartisan package to send another $20 billion in aid to Afghanistan so we can guard the poppy fields. But I can't see this Jewish Congress give $5 billion for your own national security. That doesn't make much sense to me, really. And a lot of people can't make sense of it.
Well, I'm a conservative.
He asked Speaker Pelosi, will you agree to my wall? She said no.
Conservatives on TV and politicians have a hard time articulating is intelligent reasons why the wall must be built. I am curious your thoughts on that.
Three quick things. Number one, I'm going to say some facts. I'm going to talk about fairness. Then I'm going to talk about sovereignty. Some facts. An illegal alien in the state of Arizona is twice as likely to commit a crime versus a natural-born citizen. Fact. 90% of all heroin and fentanyl come across the southern border. Fact. Over 10,000 kids are illegally sex trafficked across the southern border every single year. Fact. We have 56,000 illegal immigrants in our federal prison system. Fact. And countless in our state penitentiary system. $135 billion a year. That's how much is the financial burden on U.S. taxpayers every single year that illegal immigrants drain from our system. Fact. You put all that together, that's a pretty compelling argument that we have some problems with our southern border. Those are some facts. Number two is fairness. As Candace said, it is not fair to the people in Bolivia. It's not fair to the people in Bangladesh. And it's not fair to the people in Belarus that had to wait in line, fill out an application form, not commit a crime, and then wait a decade to come into this country to maybe have a chance to become an American. It is not fair to them. Number three is sovereignty. Why do walls matter? Why do borders matter? Borders are a physical representation of when good ideas begin and bad ideas start. If you don't believe me, just ask East and West Germany or at North or South Korea. If you believe in open borders, you do not believe in the physical delineation of where good ideas start and bad ideas start. The wall right now is not only important for facts, not only important the facts I mentioned, the fairness, but also the sovereignty. We are not Mexico. We have a unique culture. We have a unique identity. The Mexican culture is something that should be appreciated and understood, but our culture is much different and has outpaced them over the last 50 years. And to say that we should have open borders and we should have some sort of transferable citizenship cheapens the idea of the American identity and culture, the people that have waited in line, and the tens of millions of immigrants that have to fly halfway across the world to come into this country. So those are the three reasons I would give to build the wall, build it quickly, build it high, build it wide, with a big door so
and
everyone
deep.
Can come in legally. Thank you.
Thank you.
See, and what he's talking about there is really when you talk about the heroin and the fentanyl. See, the Democrats apparently, at least at the elite level of the Jewish community, are highly involved in all of these issues, sex trafficking, drug dealing, the fentanyl. We already know that Jewish pharmaceutical companies are highly involved in the fentanyl racket. And when you look at the amount of deaths, the amount of despair that the drugs have caused the American people, what you're looking at is a wholesale genocide, a crime against humanity and a crime against the American people. Now, when we look at a genocide, if it was okay for you to argue with us and say you're an anti-Semite and you need to shut your mouth while supporting the hanging of Germans who had nothing to do with anything that you think they had something to do with, yet you have a problem dealing with the same type of capital punishment issued towards the Jewish community in America that has been involved in all of these crimes against humanity and crimes against the American people, then I and others need to question why you would actually say that to us. Because what you are is saying that Jews are more important and therefore they're untouchable. This is the key problem we have in the West today. We have a ruling elite, and you could then throw in, it just happens to be, well, it doesn't just happen to be, but you could throw that in, Jewish, and you don't want to touch them because they're Jewish. And let's be honest, so many of you are afraid of this issue. So many across the board, and it's been that way. It's okay, I get it. It's been that way for 100 years or more. It's always been that way. You can be here in Saudi Arabia and talk like I'm talking today, and people will say, yeah, you're right, Fetch, but you're brave. No, the real brave people are the ones on the real deep side that actually go in and get the real facts and report them to you and then show up dead. Those are the real brave people, the ones that actually give you the facts and then you turn away and you're back on it. They're the brave ones, not me. The fentanyl, the drugs. Apparently there's marching orders from the deep state, which then goes into the CIA. This is, hey, you got to keep the borders open because we got to continue to milk this cow called America for as much money as we can get by selling America heroin, fentanyl, and all these other drugs we're bringing in. So what? We can continue to basically make money on human misery? But that's what they do, folks. The Jewish method of making money is on human misery. It is an exceptionally dark and evil type of imposition upon our lands. And it has always been that way. It's always been that way. And the reason why people keep getting thrown out from land to land to land is because of this very reason. Now, regarding the issues on opening the government, if you are to go online, because online is basically now skewed towards Jewish media, including some of the radical ones like the Raw Story, which is, I mean, these guys are loony. They're out there on this. What you find is that the news headlines are all negative. Trump threw a temper tantrum. Trump left the meeting in a temper tantrum. And it's everywhere. Temper tantrum. It's like they're taking marching orders from a single power. And what they're talking about is this meeting that was held between Trump, Republican leaders, and Pelosi and Schumer and Democratic leaders. And the way it's sold by the Jewish press is that Trump walked out of this meeting throwing a temper tantrum because he didn't get his way. Here's what Schumer and Pelosi had to say about it.
Well, I'm a conservative.
He asked Speaker Pelosi, will you agree to my wall? She said no. And he just got up and said, then we have nothing to discuss, and he just walked out. Again, we saw a temper tantrum because he couldn't get his way, and he just walked out of the meeting. I asked him to open up the government, that tomorrow so many people will have trouble paying their mortgages, paying their bills, dealing with situations when they don't get paid. And I said, just why won't you do that? We'll continue to discuss. We're willing to discuss anything. And he said, if I open up the government, you won't do what I want. That's cruel. That's callous. And that's using millions of innocent people as sort of pawns. And it was wrong. And then a few minutes later, he sort of slammed the table. And when Leader Pelosi said she didn't agree with the wall, he just walked out and said, we have nothing to discuss.
I would say this. If you don't understand financial insecurity, then you would have a policy that takes pride in saying, I'm going to keep government shut down for months or years, unless you totally agree to my position.
Now, what's being talked here is really the Jewish position. Schumer and Pelosi are not Americans, they're Jewish. Now, you may have an argument with me whether or not Pelosi and Schumer are Americans. I would say no, they're not. And it's just a matter of power projection that says yes or no. Because it's very easy to justify that these people are enemies of the American people. Now, the reality is that they, in collusion with Jewish media, the press, they sold this globally as Trump had a temper tantrum today. And unless you are able to use social media and have people getting you other sides of the story that perhaps you don't have time to go grasp, you wouldn't know that Schumer was lying to your face in the most disgusting, obnoxious manner possible in classic, I guess you could call, Jewish chutzpah. See, that's the point to social media, everybody. Social media acts as a news aggregation capability. It's a force multiplier. So I today woke up and saw all these headlines. Trump had a temper tantrum. Trump had a temper tantrum. It was everywhere. Everywhere I looked for research. But because of social media, which my access, as you can imagine, is greatly reduced now because I don't have the feeds that I used to have from people doing the research and getting information, I wouldn't know. Even though I don't trust Pelosi, I trust she's lying anyways, and I trust Schumer is a disgusting lying piece of it anyways. He doesn't fool me for a second. I'm assuming the opposite anyways, but I would have known it. But then going through social media, again, a force multiplier, people post the Republican rebuttal, and it is absolutely opposite of what Schumer did, and Schumer basically lied to my face. What a disgusting scumbag, basically. Literally lied to my face. Let's see. I don't know why that's doing. I know why that's doing that. I don't actually know why that's doing that. But let me see. I want to treat myself for some reason. I don't even know why. Let me see if I can get this clip to play. I hope this plays.
I want to clarify a few things as I just listened to Senator Schumer. I know he complained the time that you had cameras in the meeting. I think we need to bring him back because what he described the meeting to be was totally different than what took place. When we entered the room, the president, again, calling all the leaders together to solve this problem. He even brought a little candy for everybody. He started off talking a little bit about wanting to get this solved. He even spoke last night saying in 45 minutes, he says, but I think we could do it in 10. I want to turn the floor over, the president said, to Speaker Pelosi and Schumer. Tell us what offer you have, because we all had in our hands from the weekend's work of the vice president and every office had staff there about where we were. The different offers, the increases of the work that you've done to secure this border. So we turn to Speaker Pelosi. She began to argue whether we even have a crisis or whether facts are true. Turn to Schumer again, who said, we just have to open the government up. The president would go back and forth in a negotiation in a very respectful way. I saw Schumer continue to raise his voice. The president then turned to the speaker and politely asked her, okay, Nancy, if we open the government up in 30 days, could we have border security? She raised her hand and said, no, not at all. The president calmly said, I guess you're still not wanting to deal with the problem. The president wants to solve this problem. That's why he continues to bring us down. That's why he's put offers on the table. Not once have the Democrats offered anything back. The entire time I've been in these meetings, they want to just argue so people can't present a fact. They want to argue and debate whether what comes across the southern border. People are hurting. And as I've said before, I will work with anyone that wants to move America forward and wants to secure our border. This is the goal that everybody in that room, every Democrat said in that room, they're for border security. But you ask me, what American believes border security does not have some form of a barrier? It's only the Democrats sitting in that room, have I ever found. And the way they have displayed and their behavior is embarrassing to me. And the way to come out to this floor and talk about a meeting in a manner that did not take place in there is disturbing to me. I want to solve this problem. People are hurting. So I tell the Democrats, get back into the room. Let's not leave. Let's solve this problem. Just as the president said, it doesn't even take 45 minutes. We're here and we want to work.
And what's interesting about this statement is that you're looking at a politician who's really sounds legitimate on this particular soundbite there. But he doesn't grasp the Jewish angle. He still views Schumer and Pelosi as somehow being Americans. They're not. They don't serve the American people. They serve a darker, deeper Jewish agenda. They're not like you and I, Americans. He mentioned how Pelosi and Schumer would argue about the facts. And that's typical Jewish behavior. Wasting your time with nonsense and nondescript information that means literally nothing at the end of the day and solves nothing and does nothing to solve the problem. And folks, we have had these types of statements about the Jewish people for time immemorial. And yet it goes on and on because perhaps we could say it's in their DNA. This politician has not risen to the awareness point yet that when he looks across that table and he sees Schumer and Pelosi, he's dealing with an enemy within the gates of our nation. Every bit as true as there were enemies in the gates, if you will, of Weimar Germany and every other 300 plus places where these people have been dislodged and removed from their midst. You cannot do business with people like a Schumer and a Pelosi. Their only desire here is to destroy the United States. And if that hasn't become painfully obvious to everybody yet, I guess we just will have to take the lumps and keep pushing this idea forward. I've watched this for years and decades. And many of us have watched this for years and decades, and we see the problem. We see the issue. We see the tribalism. We see the disgust in the Jewish faces for everything non-Jewish. We're not fooled for one second, and we have never been fooled. And we never cared, quite frankly, how often we were labeled this or labeled that, because with all due respect, if you're not confident in what you are presenting, then you shouldn't be presenting it. And you know what? Schumer and Pelosi are very confident in what they are presenting because they're presenting nothing but nothing. They're arguing. They're arguing over what is a fact. These are the same people that will push the idea that there are 467 and a half genders. And if you don't believe them, then by gosh darn it, you're a racist, a bigot, and a homophobic. You know what? Because you don't believe them. And yet they will sit there and have the gall to come to us on a national stage in a national emergency where the government has been shut down. And they will sit there and tell us that we're the ones throwing a temper tantrum. It's basically the children with no brains in their freaking head trying to lecture the adults in the room what we should and shouldn't do. That's what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the Jewish people out there. And it's time people start to wake up and start to do something about it. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Line. Prime time for January 10th. See you all Saturday, 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio. Good night from Riyadh.